Hi, I'm Dr. Huey, and today I'll discuss the clinical management of abnormal pap smears that do not involve obvious dysplasia or cancer of the cervix. Welcome to OBGYN 101, the Gray Hair Notes. I'm Dr. Huey, the gray-haired OBGYN from Chicago, and these gray hair notes were designed to accompany the Junior Medical Student Manual, OBGYN 101. This manual is freely available at the website www.obgyn101.org. More of these audio notes can be found at grayhairobgyn.com. Actinomycosis is a fungus that occasionally is identified on pap smears and for the most part is an incidental finding posing no threat to the patient. Its clinical significance is controversial. IUD users sometimes, although rarely, develop pelvic abscesses from this organism. For that reason, some physicians have recommended removal of the IUD in asymptomatic patients if actinomycoses are present. Others disagree, believing that removal of the IUD in patients with no symptoms is an overreaction to a very small chance of a problem. Atrophy is an expected finding in menopausal women not taking estrogen replacement therapy. If this is the only abnormal finding and the patient has no symptoms, it can be safely ignored. If the patient complains of vaginal dryness, irritation, painful intercourse, vaginal discharge, odor, or any other symptom, then the pap finding of atrophic vaginitis is helpful in determining the cause. If the pap smear has other abnormalities, then treating the patient for 2 to 3 weeks with Premarin and then repeating the pap smear will often result in the other abnormality disappearing. ASCUS, or ASCUS, which stands for atypical squamous cells of undetermined significance, is the way the cytologist tells you that there is something on the patient's pap smear that is not perfectly normal, but they can't tell with any certainty what it is or whether it's significant. ASCUS smears are handled differently in different circumstances. If this is the first time any abnormality has been found on the patient's pap smears, most gynecologists recommend simply treating any coincidental infection, if it's present, and repeating the pap smear in about 6 months. Should the abnormality persist, then colposcopy is usually recommended for the persistent ASCUS result. If the patient has previously been evaluated for an abnormal pap and found to have either mild dysplasia or HPV changes, then the occurrence of an occasional ASCUS smear is not surprising and is often considered normal for that person. In higher-risk circumstances, further colposcopy is sometimes undertaken to re-evaluate the cervix. A patient with a past history of cervical dysplasia who has had many normal pap smears following treatment and who develops ASCUS should probably be reevaluated colposcopically if she has not had that procedure done recently, as this could represent the beginning of a new problem. Candida or yeast is occasionally identified on pap smears and for the most part is an incidental finding, posing no threat to the patient. If the patient is experiencing symptoms such as itching, burning, or a cheesy discharge, then she should be treated for a yeast infection. If the pap smear shows significant inflammation or reactive changes or reparative changes or class 2 or class 2A categories, then some physicians favor treating the yeast infection, which makes the pap smear easier to read, and then following up with another pap smear. Other physicians feel that it's not necessary so long as the patient continues to come in annually for a pap smear. Any abnormality not seen this year because of an obscuring yeast infection, they reason, will be seen at the next pap smear. If you are preparing to investigate a more serious abnormality with colposcopy, then it's usually worthwhile treating the yeast to try to reduce the confusing picture of inflammation that may be present. If the pap smear is otherwise normal and the patient is without symptoms, then candida appearing on the pap smear can be safely ignored and the pap repeated in a year. Chlamydia is a common sexually transmitted disease. It can be found in 5 to 20% of asymptomatic women depending on their sexual history. In the majority of cases, it causes no problems, but in some patients it causes pelvic inflammatory disease, infertility, or cervicitis. Whenever chlamydia is suggested on a pap smear, you basically have two alternative approaches. First, you can assume chlamydia is present, treat the patient with doxycycline or erythromycin or azithromycin, and then perform a chlamydia culture to ensure that the chlamydia has been eradicated. Or alternatively, you can start off with a chlamydia culture, and if it's positive, treat the patient, but if the culture is negative, then ignore the pap smear finding. The presence of coccoid bacteria on an otherwise normal pap smear is of no consequence. If the pap shows inflammation sufficient to obscure the reading and the cytologist asks for an earlier than normal repeat pap, then many physicians will treat the patient with a broad-spectrum antibiotic suitable for strep and anaerobic bacteria, such as flagyl or amoxicillin, before repeating the smear. Others will simply repeat the smear at a somewhat earlier than normal time. If the pap is otherwise normal, but the patient complains of symptoms of vaginal discharge, bad odor, or irritation, then the presence of coccoid bacteria on the pap smear is sometimes used as the basis for treatment using broad-spectrum antibiotics effective against strep and anaerobes. In the absence of symptoms or other abnormality on the pap smear, the presence of coccoid bacteria is not considered clinically significant and needs no treatment. If the pap smear suggests the presence of condyloma, this is a significant abnormality. Condyloma are not by themselves dangerous, but do require further investigation because they are caused by HPV, human papillomavirus, the same virus which is associated with cervical dysplasia and cancer of the cervix. Also, the pap changes which suggest condyloma have basically the same clinical significance as the changes suggested by low-grade intraepithelial lesions such as LGSIL, CIN1, and mild dysplasia. Patients demonstrating condyloma on their pap smears who previously had normal pap smears are ideally evaluated with colposcopy and cervical biopsies to determine the precise diagnosis, extent of the problem, and rule out other more significant illness. Drying artifact is sometimes described. The pap smear must be sprayed with cytologic fixative immediately, within seconds of spreading on the smear on the glass slide. The slide should be soaked so that the fixative will begin to fall off the slide if it is tilted. Don't actually tilt it as you may lose some cells. The presence of endocervical cells on a pap smear is an indication that the smear included sampling of the cervical canal and, by inference, the squamocolumnar junction. If endocervical cells are not seen, it may mean that you did not sample high enough in the cervical canal, or your sampling was fine but the cytologist didn't recognize the cells. Some physicians feel that any pap smear without endocervical cells should be repeated. However, studies have demonstrated that paps without endocervical cells are still very effective in detecting abnormalities. Pap smears obtained at a 6-week postpartum visit often don't have endocervical cells present. If the pap smear says that endometrial cells are present, this means that endometrial cells, which are normally located inside the uterus, have been shed and are appearing at the mouth of the cervix. This is a normal finding in women of childbearing age, particularly if they are close to starting or just finishing their menstrual period. Menopausal women taking estrogen replacement therapy may also normally show a few endometrial cells on the pap smears from time to time. In menopausal women not taking estrogen replacement therapy, the presence of endometrial cells is an abnormal finding and should be followed up with further study, such as an endometrial biopsy or sonohistogram, to try and determine the reason for the presence of these cells. Estrogen has a predictable effect on the cells of the cervix, and the absence or presence of estrogen can be determined on the pap smear. In women of childbearing age or menopausal women taking estrogen hormone therapy, the pap would be expected to show an estrogen effect, and its absence would be a curiosity, although it's not dangerous. In menopausal women not taking estrogen, the presence of a detectable estrogen effect would suggest some non-ovarian source of estrogen, and the long-term effects of unopposed estrogen should be considered. The presence of Gardnerella on an otherwise normal pap smear in a patient without symptoms is of no consequence. If the pap smear shows inflammation sufficient to obscure the reading and the cytologist asks for an earlier than normal repeat pap, many physicians will treat the patient with flagyl before repeating the smear. Others will simply repeat the smear at a somewhat earlier than normal time. If the pap smear demonstrates giant cells with intranuclear inclusions, the cytologist may report possible herpes virus. In the asymptomatic patient with an otherwise normal pap smear, this is of no consequence. Some physicians will bring the patient back for herpes culture if her history is negative for herpes, while others will ignore this finding. If the pap shows significant degrees of inflammation, then the presence of herpes virus may explain the inflammation. A follow-up pap smear avoiding any time of herpes recurrence may give more reliable information. In patients suspected of having herpes, a herpes culture is ideal for confirming the diagnosis. If HPV is described in the pap results, it represents an abnormality in the appearance of the cells of the skin of the cervix, which suggests but does not confirm the presence of human papillomavirus. This finding is often based on the presence of coelocytes, in other words, those cells having enlarged nuclei surrounded by a clear halo of cytoplasm. Coelocytes often, but not invariably, point to the presence of virus in the cells. Patients demonstrating these changes who previously had normal pap smears are ideally evaluated with colposcopy and cervical biopsies to determine the presence or absence of HPV. An inadequate smear means that the quality of the pap smear is not sufficiently good to give a reliable interpretation. The smear may be inadequate because an insufficient number of cells were present. It's possible that the slide had too many red blood cells on it or too many white blood cells on it. It's possible that the cells had dried out before the fixative was applied to the slide. An inadequate smear should be repeated, using good technique and fixing the slide with appropriate spray immediately after the cells are smeared on the glass. Before repeating the PAP, you may want to treat any infection that is present to eliminate the white blood cells and to make sure that the patient is not on her period to eliminate the red blood cells. An inconclusive smear usually means that there are too few cells to be certain of the diagnosis, or there are confusing findings and the cytologist is warning you not to rely too strongly on the smear. It's wise to repeat inconclusive smears. Before repeating the PAP, treat any infection that may be present, avoid her menstrual flow, and get a good representative sample and apply the fixative immediately. Inflammation merely means the cervix is irritated for some reason. In the absence of any other symptoms or any other significant abnormality on the pap smear, it can be safely ignored. If inflammation is severe enough, it may interfere with the ability of the cytologist to accurately read the pap. Inflammation by itself need not be treated. If other abnormalities are identified in addition to the inflammation, then you may need to treat the other problems and the inflammation will probably go away. IUD changes are minor changes seen on the pap smears of some women with IUDs. These changes are of no clinical significance. Coelocytosis is a distinctive abnormality in the appearance of the cells of the skin of the cervix, in which some of the nuclei are surrounded by tiny halos. Most commonly, these changes occur in the presence of HPV, or human papillomavirus, but occasionally are associated with more serious problems such as cervical dysplasia or even malignancy. Patients demonstrating coelocytosis who previously had normal PAPs are ideally evaluated with colposcopy and cervical biopsies to determine the source of the coelocytes. Leptothrix is a curious bacteria occasionally found in large numbers in the vagina and the cervix. It apparently causes no harm and is not considered a pathogen. It wouldn't be worth noting except for two characteristics. First, it can live comfortably with Trichomonas, and second, it can resemble yeast on a wet mount. You can safely ignore this. Nuclear atypia is an abnormality in the appearance of the nuclei of the cells of the skin of the cervix. Most commonly, these changes occur in the presence of human papillomavirus, but occasionally are associated with more serious problems such as cervical dysplasia or even early malignancy. Patients demonstrating nuclear atypia who previously had normal PAPs are ideally evaluated with colposcopy and cervical biopsies to determine the source of the atypia. Reparative and reactive changes are changes in the skin cells of the cervix which suggest a healing process is underway or that the cervix is reacting to the presence of a virus or bacteria. While these changes are not dangerous, their presence often provokes gynecologists to repeat the pap smear sooner than an expected time. The reasons for this response are 1. Reactive or reparative changes make the pap smear more difficult to interpret, so the clinician cannot be reassured by this pap smear. 2. Distinguishing between reactive and reparative changes and early dysplasia is difficult, and the PAP interpretation may be incorrect. Other gynecologists feel that in a patient with previously normal PAP smears, the first appearance of reactive and reparative changes is not cause for alarm, and they will repeat the PAP smear at the next annual exam. Their reasoning is that should there be an underlying dysplastic process, that the progression of dysplasia is usually so slow that there is no particular advantage to repeating the smear sooner than the annual exam. Squamous metaplasia is an innocent finding that represents the normal squamous epithelium of the face of the cervix overgrowing the columnar epithelium of the cervical canal. Squamous metaplasia need not be treated. Trichomonas is usually treated when identified on pap smear. Trichomonas causes substantial inflammation of the cervix and makes the job of interpreting the pap smear more difficult. After treating the patient with Flagyl, the smear should be repeated in about 3 to 6 months, long enough to allow complete resolution of any lingering inflammation, but sooner than a year. If there is other evidence of a significant cervical lesion, such as dysplasia, then the Pap may be repeated sooner after treatment. Thanks for listening to the OBGYN 101 Gray Hair Notes. And don't forget to go online to www.obgyn101.org for the multimedia edition. This edition combines text with pictures, graphics, and videos, all designed to help you master the third year OBGYN learning objectives. Also, listen to more Gray-Haired Notes at www.grayhairedobgyn.com. See ya!